The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield, News and Talk Station.
The Money Show brought to you by the Old Mutual Investment Group. Invest where the fund managers invest. Good evening and welcome to The Money Show this evening. I'm looking forward to chatting to the man who's in charge of distributing the new Nokia 3310 in South Africa. Also, Gary McNamara. Just a heads up to Gary McNamara because he needs to get his calculating socks on. I wonder what the value of the all share index on the JSE would be if Naspers didn't own 10 Cent. 10 Cent is a critical element of Naspers, and you see it in the results today coming through thick and fast. Without 10 Cent, Naspers's results would be very, very different, and Naspers would be a considerably smaller company. And Naspers makes up 20% of the value of the JSE. So if 10 Cent wasn't in Naspers, how high would the level of the JSE be? Gary McNamara has got that look on his face, which suggests he has brought his thinking socks, which is good. I'm glad, Gary. We'll talk about this in a couple of minutes' time. That's your heads up this evening, Gary McNamara. Lynn Brown, what a great quote in Eyewitness News. Quote, I actually wanted somebody who could run a company. Now, this is the public enterprises minister who's just gone through a very traumatic process with the board of Eskom to appoint an acting chief executive. Surely that is requirement number one. Somebody, can you run a company? Yes, you can. Okay, let's see if you've got everything else. It's almost like last on the list of public enterprises, it would seem. I mean, maybe I'm being unfair, but it just strikes me. I actually wanted somebody who could run a company. Excellent. I'm delighted that we've got somebody who can run a company at the helm of Eskom.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield.
Coming up, your chance to win in the Biz Quiz with MTN Business. Listen out as I test your knowledge of the world of business. If you're the whiz of the MTN Biz Quiz, you'll win 2,000 Rand in cash thanks to MTN Business. The Biz Quiz with MTN Business to protect your business. Visit mtnbusiness.com/ZA.
The Money Show on your number one news and talk station.
There's a huge amount of nostalgia for the days when mobile phones were exactly that. Phones that were mobile. You could also send an SMS, of course. That came a little bit later after the phone calls. BlackBerry then made it popular to get your emails to your phone, and they created a keypad that gave your thumbs a workout. Steve Jobs then went and ruined phones, and he turned them into mobile devices, and the world of apps was born, and that certainly has changed the globe. Some of you, though, will be delighted with the return of a slightly modernized version of the Nokia 3310. And Artur Nomela is the chief executive of HMD Global, and today launching, finally, we've been hearing about this, Artur, for so long, the Nokia 3310 in Africa.
Yeah, it's finally here. So here is Artur Nomela. I'm calling from the Johannesburg airport. Yeah, it's truly here. We are making the modernized version of the iconic 3310. We are making it much better now, like 10 times more talk time, 22 hours, and 1 month standby time. And it's the most beautiful, modernized version of the iconic phone.
You're speaking like the
proud. And actually, many people have been saying that we have created the ideal digital detox phone for people who want to spend more time with their friends and families.
When I look at this, and I wonder whether or not it's not a little bit like when Volkswagen relaunched the Beetle about, 17 years ago. There'd been the iconic VW Beetle, of course, which had been launched just after World War II. VW brought it back in a far more modernized, far slicker, far more feature-rich motor car. Is the new Nokia 3310 a little bit like that?
Yeah, there is, of course, similarity, but the foundation for us to make this phone was that when we announced that we will have the next chapter of the Nokia in the market in terms of the Android smartphones and then continuing the feature phone, we asked our fans and consumers, what should we do? And there were so many people asking all these iconic models that can we have this or that? There were many, almost all the iconic ones were mentioned. But 3310 was the top of the list. And we just wanted to have some fun and create something absolutely outstandingly beautiful device for the fans.
There was a time when probably two out of three phones in South Africa would have been a Nokia phone. That seemed to, then Nokia dramatically misread the move from feature phones to smartphones, and Nokia practically exited the market. Explain to me, please, Nokia, the Nokia brand, the connection of HMD Global to Nokia. I thought Microsoft had bought Nokia and Nokia was going the way of Kodak. Please explain it to me.
Can we agreed with Nokia that we have an exclusive licensing agreement, 10 years, to drive the Nokia in the phones and tablets. And we bought back the Nokia feature phone business from Microsoft. So now it's in the global, in the very close partnership with Nokia, Google, the industry giants like Qualcomm and Foxconn are driving now this new generation of the Nokia devices. And finally we have Nokia in Android, with the Android operating system. The consumers have been waiting for this moment for a long, long time.
How many of these do you think you're going to sell across the African continent? How big is the market for feature phones in a market that's been spoiled, frankly, by the huge leap forward in smartphones?
Yeah, I think the feature phone in general, if you look at the global scale, the Nokia branded feature phone is number one or number two in pretty much all the respective markets. Very strong, and I think globally, if you count all the markets, we are now becoming number one in feature phones. So we are renewing the portfolio and driving the new innovations also in that domain. But the main story for us is absolutely bringing Android into the Nokia family, and providing outstandingly great devices, the best of the best Android experience.
How many are you going? How many are you going to sell after? Yeah. How many are you going to sell?
I'm not able to disclose the exact numbers, but our aim is to be among the top players in the industry when it comes to the smartphones, and we will hold the position of number one in feature phones globally.
Limited internet capability, a camera that doesn't have nearly the same spec as smartphone cameras. It does have the battery power to keep a small town going for a week. I mean, that is a huge plus. I mean, a month standby time, 22 hours of talk time. Those are massive positives for this phone. But is it going to be a starter phone? Is it going to be a second phone to people who can afford it? Where are you aiming this device?
I think this device itself is providing, this is now Nokia 3310, the opportunity to have the second phone that lasts forever in terms of the battery performance. And you are able to get yourself out from the constant annoyance of the webs or social media, if you so decide. And of course, we as a Nokia, we will look at opportunities to look at other means of serving the consumer needs with these kind of devices. And then this is absolute outstanding as a basic phone. Second to none.
Arthur, what phone are you talking to me on this evening?
This is the 3310, and then we are looking at the other portfolios as well.
But you're holding a Nokia 33. You're holding a Nokia 3310 in your hand right now.
Yes, I'm doing.
Artur Nomela, just checking. You got to punch your own product. Artur Nomela this evening, the chief executive of HMD Global, producing under license a new version, a smarter version of an old feature phone. Are you queuing up? Are you going to be one of the first South Africans to hold one of these phones? Do you care enough, or are you spoiled like so many people are by cheaper and cheaper smart devices, and smart devices which don't have the battery power and they don't have Snake, which is a very important feature of the old 3310. Are you excited by the launch of this product in South Africa? I'm going to be so interested to see how well it does. Yeah, thank you, Andrew and Centurion. Good Nokia experience. I mean, not the same sort of experience as the smartphones and all of that sort of thing. So it is something which Andrew is celebrating this evening. So, yeah, it's nice to have, I suspect. We'll take your calls on 011-883-0702-021-446-0567. JSE All-Share Index on the day, 51,500. It was a pretty solid day on the JSE after what's been a tumultuous week. But the currency strengthening against the dollar this evening, 12.92 against the pound, a little better off at 16.41, and against the euro, 14.47 or thereabouts. So, yeah, that's what's happening on the markets. Gary McNamara from Sunland Private Wealth in a moment.
The Money Show.
The markets.
Gary McNamara, I hope you've got my challenge. Are you able to fulfill my challenge on Nuspat? I can hear the heavy breathing, which suggests to me that you're feeling a little bit sweaty.
You love to put me on the spot, Bruce. I'm going to put a number out there, but I'm going to, as a typical economist, I'm going to say, on the other hand, 40,000, if you just look at it, simple maths, take the 10 cents out of it, because they represent most of the value in Nuspat, which is 20% of the all share. But it doesn't actually work like that, because if we didn't have a NASPAS, the money would be looking for something alternative. But I'm going to give you 40,000 as my answer.
Okay, I mean, it's an interesting one, and it just shows the importance of NASPAS to the overall index. It shows the importance of 10 cent to NASPAS, and therefore 10 cent to the overall market. If you're an index investor, somebody who buys Satrix 40, your Satrix 40 would be worth 20% less than it is now if 10 cent wasn't in the NASPAS share price.
Absolutely, and I think that is obviously coming as an active investor, is the risk of tracker funds, where they talk about put all your eggs in one basket and watch it. Well, you certainly are doing some of that when you're looking at NASPAS and you're just tracking the all-share index, because provided they get it right, you'll benefit, but there is a risk, and it's in a very rapidly developing market, social media, online gaming, and it's a market that evolves very quickly. It needs a lot of development capital, and its lifespan generally is not that long. They don't tend to be around after 20 years. So you've got to be very careful being an index tracker, particularly on the JSE. So if it's not the mining sector like it might have been 10 years ago, it's certainly NASPAS at the moment. And it makes it very difficult if you want to use that as a benchmark, because if you want to outperform the benchmark to take a 25% bet on one share, you've got to have a very high conviction call on that.
You do, but NASPAS results are, I mean, the performance is all about 10 cent, and 10 cent is performing.
Absolutely, and certainly has outperformed analyst expectations probably for 4 years in a row now. And the QQ data, which is the online gaming side, the WeChat, it's just going exponential. And it's almost like a guerrilla game. Certainly in the Chinese market, they run less of a risk with some of the Western technology coming in to be a competitor. So you could almost argue they're the monopoly. And everybody talks about the time that they spend on social media. So while you are the dominant player like WeChat, you've got a license to print money. And they haven't optimized, in our view yet, the margins and the advertising opportunity. So probably still quite a lot of opportunity in a very populous market, but the market's probably not giving them full credit for that, because the rest of the business, if you look at 10 cent in NASPAS share price, you're actually getting the rest of the business at a discount. You're not paying for it. So there's a little bit of a concern with some of the rest of the business with the cash burn. And the other factor is that they're not the dominant shareholder in 10 cent. They own 33% of 10 cent. So they don't control the cash flow.
They don't, but it has served them so brilliantly well. And I mean, NASPAS, which burnt its fingers in its early forays into China, where it tried to put non-Chinese people in charge of Chinese businesses, and they got burned badly. They lost lots of money. And by allowing Pony Ma and the team at Tencent to run with it, they have benefited extraordinarily. There's some pressure. I've seen some stories this week to unbundle that stake in Tencent to shareholders. In other words, say, okay, we won't include Tencent in our results anymore. Here we go, NASPAS shareholders. Here's our shares in Tencent. You can have them yourselves.
Absolutely. And it's been a comment that's, as you say, been around for a while now. Management's very adamant, and they're onto the analysts the same way every year. We're still very happy with our Tencent stake. And, you know, if we had listened to you 2 years ago, we wouldn't have participated in the upside. So they certainly believe in the upside of Tencent. And the market's looking for the short-term win in terms of the unlock of value, because there's no doubt if they do the unbundling, you're going to get the Tencent stake, which is worth about 4,000 Rand a share. So you can imagine Naspers trades at 2,600. So the unlock, obviously you wouldn't get all of that value because it would trade at a discount. But that's what some of the commentators have been saying for a number of years now. And I guess to management's credit, they've backed the Tencent story and to their benefit.
Yeah, there's a bit of pressure coming to bear on DStv finally. I mean, a lot of people get really grumpy about how much they have to pay for DStv and what they get in return for it. That pressure is beginning to come through in these results.
Absolutely. Yeah, the market quite liked the results because obviously they did see, well, they knew more or less what Tencent was about previously. But particularly in the African side, where we've seen a number of businesses battling because of the exchange rate and getting that right back into their reporting currency. The content is also paid for in dollars, which makes it quite a difficult one. They've seen quite a lot of churn in subscriber base, but they did see a modest growth from the DStv side, and the market liked that. And I think that's why it was up 2.5% on the day. So as you say, it accounted for more than half of the gain on the all share today, and the market liked it. And the dividend was up 12%, which again, I think the market's indicating that they feel Naspers has got control of their cash flow, which is one of the key factors that the market looks at.
One of the cruelest questions that reporters ask chief executives when they resign suddenly is, did you jump or were you pushed? I suppose one could ask that question of Oak Bay today. Did you jump before you got pushed? They applied for voluntary suspension from trade on the JSE.
No comment. I hope they were pushed very hard.
You hope they were pushed very hard. Well, they were being nudged, I suspect, because they ran out of sponsors. They don't have a sponsor. There's an audit issue as well. Oak Bay is one of the more pointless listings, frankly, of recent times on the JSE. It's done very, very little for investors.
No, I agree, Bruce, and good riddance, and hopefully we can go further.
I want you to pull a punch from time to time. When I look at it this way, I mean, more seriously, though, the biggest losers probably are state pensioners via the Public Investment Corporation. Public Investment Corporation did put real money into this business when it listed. There is a serious side to this.
No, absolutely. And that is often the risk that we see. We certainly, and I take the analogy not necessarily to the Oak Bay, but in the platinum sector, we've got a platinum price where a lot of the companies are not profitable. But because of the job creation, etc., the PRC is taking hard-earned pension money and they're supporting some businesses that are not viable longer term. Their production is below, their production costs is above the long-term cost of the platinum price. And that is the risk that the PRC sometimes is seen from a government point of view to be an easy option to protect jobs, and I think that runs the risk, as you say, with very hard-earned money.
Yeah, it does, unfortunately. The JSE having a good day. We ended up on the day, but down on the week at 51,503. Banks surprisingly okay with all of the noise and all of the chaos that was erupted this week with the public protector deciding that she should be dabbling in policymaking.
Yeah, they've had a tough time of it in the last week or two. I guess the stronger rand has helped them. It is a little bit of a weaker dollar, which has also supported commodity prices in the last day or so. So the banks probably need a bit of a breather, but they've had a tough time of it in the last week or two. What you're also seeing is very much from an investment market point of view, people looking at the South Africa Incorporated, they probably don't really want to be there because of the uncertainty, the outlook, no policy direction. And they're looking at companies that can generate earnings without really having to have the South African economy behind them, and it's very difficult. So from a longer-term banking point of view, we need policy direction, and I'm suggesting until we get some political resolution, we're not going to get it.
Yeah, I mean, insurers all over the place. I mean, Sanlam doing okay, Discovery doing okay. The others in various degrees of taking strain.
Yeah, and I think it's a matter of looking after your market share. There's been a massive evolution in terms of your consumer base in South Africa, and certainly the likes of Sanlam and Discovery have embraced it, and some of the competitors have probably stuck to their traditional market shares, and they're counting the costs at the moment.
There we go. Gary McNamara, thank you very much. Gary McNamara is a portfolio manager at Sanlam Private Wealth. At 6:30 this evening, Tara Penny now with the very latest Eyewitness News.
Thanks, Bruce. Good evening. The Chamber of Mines says it's confused by comments by the Mineral Resources Minister that he's open to talks with companies over the new mining charter. Minister Mosebenzi Zwane made the comments this afternoon. However, he also rebuked the mining firms for planning to take the new rules to court, saying they're negotiating in bad faith. The minister unveiled the charter last week, raising the threshold for black ownership in the mining industry to 30% and bringing in other regulations the sector says it simply can't afford. The Chamber of Mines has released a statement questioning the timing of the offer for discussions a week after the charter's release. The public protector says the failure by Helen Zille and Patricia DeLille to attend an inspection in Masipumelele today is in contempt of her office. Mkwebane has visited the area near Fishhook after residents lodged a complaint and went to the Human Rights Commission over poor living conditions. She says her office had issued a subpoena to both the Western Cape Premier and Cape Town Mayor to attend. Monique Mortlock reports.
Busisiwe Mkwebane says she will initiate contempt proceedings against Helen Zille and Patricia DeLille. The public protector says her office has the right to issue a subpoena under special circumstances for the purposes of an investigation.
Hence, the speedy attendance of this matter is based on the fact that people cannot continue living like this. Let's find a quick solution which will then give them an opportunity as the city to then develop a place where they can move the people to. And unfortunately, we didn't get that cooperation.
The Premier's office says Zille was overseas on business when they received the communication and that it was not served directly on the subpoenaed person or their designate, which is required by law. The mayor's office also says no subpoena was directly served on DeLille. Monique Mortlock, Eyewitness News.
Western Cape investment agency Westgro has identified emerging sectors such as renewable energy and tech startups as key drivers of economic growth. The national growth rate has slowed as South Africa is in a technical recession, but the Western Cape economy is outperforming the country's. Westgro CEO Tim Harris says new sectors are key to growth.
Like renewable energy, like business process outsourcing and call centers, like what's happening in tech entrepreneurship. Those sectors, they're new and they're forming here first. We're having more companies headquartering out of Cape Town in those spaces than in some cases the rest of the African continent.
And Madrid has ramped up security for the start of World Pride 2017. It's one of the biggest celebrations of lesbian, gay, bisexual and transgender rights, with hundreds of thousands of people expected to attend. The 10-day celebration culminates with a huge parade on the 1st of July down the Paseo del Prado, one of the Spanish capital's central avenues, which in itself could attract up to 1 million people. A partly cloudy day in store for Gauteng tomorrow. Overnight lows between 2 and 6 degrees, highs of 17 and 18. Also partly cloudy in Cape Town. A moderate southeasterly forecast, a low of 8 and a high of 16. The top story, the Chamber of Mines says it's confused by comments by the Mineral Resources Minister that he's open to talks with companies over the new mining charter.
The Money Show.
Number one news and talk station.
Messages this evening coming through on smartphones and versus cell phones. Mark has got an original 3310. He wants to know if there are any offers. Mark, I think you should hold on to it. I mean, if it's still working, if it still takes power and you can still get a SIM card into it, I'd be an incredibly useful device to have. I found a box of old cell phones the other day. I felt very bad about it because I'm sure I could have given them away. I don't know if anybody would want them anymore. There's an old Sony Ericsson in there when I was, you know, fed up with Nokia at the time and was so desperate to get back to Nokia then. Here's Mike, who says he's old school. He typed this SMS on a 1112 Nokia. It's in daily use, says Mike. I had to Google on my smartphone, Mike, what the Nokia 1112 looks like. Yeah, I remember that one. It was a nice phone. And clearly, it's got durability as it was launched in 2006. What's so interesting is that here is a company that has got under license from Nokia. Nokia sold its cell phone business to Microsoft and then bought the feature phones, the old school phones, back from Microsoft. And now under license, these guys are now selling these phones. Artu Numela, we spoke to this evening, chief executive at HMD Global. They are the guys who are going to be marketing these phones across the African continent. Not wanting to give any stats, not telling us how big the market is. But it's interesting. I wonder. It's a bit like, to my mind, the relaunched VW Beetle. It was a very nice car. But it lacked the charm of the original VW Beetle, and there were better cars on the market than the relaunched VW Beetle. So not that many were sold, I suspect, because people had other choices. And I wonder whether or not the nostalgia trip is going to evaporate.
702 and Cape Talk.
The Money Show.
To change its mandate, I would, pray and hope that it does not interfere with one of the independence. But secondly, that...
Don't interrupt Nhlanhla Nene, Obi. Okay, we'll get back to that, because Nhlanhla Nene is an important guy to hear from. We're running into one or two small hiccups this evening. If you're hearing a couple of mixed messages, I apologize. But it's time for the best bits of the Money Show. And it's where we look back at some of the best bits of the week, hassle-free. The Money Show, of course, brought to you by the Old Mutual Investment Group. Invest where the fund managers invest. All's well that ends well, it would seem. It's been a tumultuous week. I mean, every week seems to get harder than the previous one. But there's been pretty hefty pushback against the mining charter this week, despite the president's parliamentary endorsement of the plan that people in the industry say will destroy jobs, because it'll put investors off investing their capital where it is needed, and they will go where it is welcome. Now, an interesting story I saw today, and I see the Chamber of Mines is reflecting on it this evening. The Mineral Resources Minister, Mosebenzi Zwane, reportedly today saying he'll talk to the mining industry. Mining industry through the chamber tonight, saying, well, it's quite surprised because he wasn't interested in talking before. So that, to my mind, is progress. There's also been widespread criticism of the public protector's overreach over Busisiwe Mgwabane's recommendation of a change to the Reserve Bank mandate. Now, earlier this week, we managed to get hold of the former finance minister, Nhlanhla Nene. You had a little snippet of him a moment ago. Nowadays, of course, Nhlanhla Nene is a businessman. He is the chairman of an investment company. So wearing his investment hat, I asked him his view on the public protector's attempt to get the Reserve Bank to alter that mandate.
If we are talking about amending the constitution in order to change its mandate, I would pray and hope that it does not interfere with one of the independence. But secondly, that in my view, the primary object being that of protecting the value of the currency, it continues to say that must be done in the interest of balanced, sustainable economic growth in the Republic. And I would want to believe that it does address the concerns, but I'm not too sure the context in which the public protector has made the remarks.
That's Nhlanhla Nene, the former finance minister. He never was going to the BRICS Bank. The public protector's main finding was that APSA should be liable to pay back 1.125 billion rand. That's about 8% of last year's profits for a bailout that a bank it bought 15 years ago called Bancorp received during the apartheid years. APSA refutes it. It says it's not its role to pay back the money. It should be the job of Sanlam policyholders who were the beneficiaries of that money. Public protector has ignored, says APSA, its submissions on the issue. It is going against the Davis Committee, which sat in the year 2000 on this particular issue, and said, look, something went wrong, but we weren't ever going to be able to find the people who are really responsible to pay back this money, so it's a waste of time trying to chase it down. The APSA spokesperson, Songezo Zibi, earlier this week.
We met with council, the senior council, yesterday. They certainly feel that we have a very strong case to take to the High Court for the findings and the remedial actions to be set aside. Because before you get to the remedial actions, your finding has to make sense. And the public protector has not made sense of a finding.
Okay.
So that's important. You have to establish that first, and then your remedial action then is not irrational.
Songezo Zibi speaks on behalf of APSA. We had him on The Money Show this week. Now, this week on Make Money Mondays, I got up close and personal, but too close, actually, with John Robbie. I asked him some very intimate questions about money, his attitude towards money, what informs it, and some mistakes that he might have made.
Biggest money mistake ever, investing in an Irish pub with a certain well-known businessman. And it's all to do with a very well-known author who wrote a book called Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Because I read it just before my wife inherited a little bit of money. Uh-huh. And we said, you've got to do something with this money. You've got to use it, etc.
You've got to get an asset.
Correct. And an Irish McGinty's pub that didn't go very far was the result of that. So that was the, and again, I think that I love pubs and I enjoy drinking and I enjoy fun, but I didn't enjoy running a pub. And I think that the message there is don't get involved in something that you're not interested in.
David Shapiro loves football. So you open up a football goods store and all the shirts and stuff, and then nobody was buying them.
Yeah, exactly.
And nobody was coming to your pub, unfortunately. It was tucked away at Monte Cassino.
It wasn't that nobody was coming. It was nobody was coming during the week, but the rental didn't stop during the week.
Awkward.
But anyway, that's a lesson learnt, and my fellow investor and I stayed great friends, and my wife and I stayed married.
That's an achievement. Sorry about the inheritance, dear. When you look at money lessons, best money lesson, I mean, I suppose the money lessons, the hard lessons are good lessons. They're not lessons you want to repeat or wish on your worst enemy, but have you had any pleasant money lessons?
Well, I think, again, that making a plan, you know, making a plan at some stage, and again, looking at some of these sportsmen who are there, who are so obsessed with that sport at the moment, they're making good money, etc. There's no plan for afterwards. A lot of people coming up to, I suppose, in the 50 bracket, etc. They've got pensions, etc. But a plan just doesn't involve money. It also involves lifestyle. And that's where this company I'm involved with looks at the lifestyle. You, your wife, planning for what you're going to do for this major, major step. And that's been a big lesson. Make a plan, no matter how bad things are. Don't do what I did when I owed all that money, you know, afraid to open letters, etc. Make a plan. You'll feel better from it. And once you've got a plan, you can actually start addressing the issue. So I think that's the biggest lesson from money.
John Robbie giving us some money lessons. Yeah, good man, John Robbie. And it's fun to have him back in studio. The futurist Graham Codrington was our guest in our Big Five feature this week. And he suggested five things that you need to do if you want to stay ahead in a world that is changing faster than you can say public protector overreach. He was talking about the importance of failing, but more important than learning from, far more important than failing is learning from failing.
If you look at the top 10 companies at the moment in terms of market valuation or innovation, you will discover that all of them, without exception, have had more failed products than successes. Mm. They've just picked themselves up and gone for the bigger success.
If you look at these five lessons that you're giving us, the big five things you need to do in order to stay ahead in a changing world, is there one company or an individual who sort of epitomizes this way of approaching life?
I'll give you the obvious one and then the not so obvious one. Elon Musk, of course. And you know I'm a bit of a fanboy of
his. That's okay.
But he's the new Edison. So he's the crazy extreme of this. And those are not necessarily the best examples. Because you don't necessarily want a Steve Jobs. You don't necessarily want a Travis Kalanick working in your company, as he discovered today.
But look what he achieved.
Yeah, but now let me go to the guy who's more mainstream. And I think it's Amazon. I think it's Jeff Bezos.
Yeah.
Because I think he's done all of this, but he's done it very scientifically, very deliberately, very cautiously.
For 20-something years. This isn't a one-hit wonder.
And you know what? For the first 15 of those 20 years, he told his shareholders to get stuffed. I'm not giving you. If you want share price growth, you've come to the wrong guy. Yet we all bought, and I did buy early. But you know, people who did buy in, he basically said, "I promise you nothing except that if you stick with me, we'll be great." And he was right.
Graham Codrington, he speaks about the future. He's a great communicator. Graham Codrington is so well read. He knows his subject so very, very well. And he presented our Big Five feature to us this evening. So we've had a good week. It's been a tumultuous week for South Africa, but The Money Show has brought you some of the best bits. And those are some of the best bits from the week that was here on The Money Show. If you want to hear more of those interviews, if you want to catch up on what you've missed, go to where you get your podcasts. That could be in the iTunes store. You can go to our website. You can download our podcasts free of charge from our website. You can listen to them. You can share the links. You can tell your friends about it. And we'd be very, very grateful for that. And those are the best bits of The Money Show this evening. On the next Money Show, I've got Dr. Michael Moll. He's a guy with the good teeth. You know Michael Moll, former Mr. South Africa. He's a busy guy, but I want to find out what he does with his money. I'm sure he's got lots. Also, Johnny Copeland on a book called Maverick Insider, A Struggle for Union Independence at a Time of National Liberation. One of the most successful former trade unionists turned capitalists. Johnny Copeland on the next Money Show.
It's time to put your business knowledge to the test. The Biz Quiz with MTN on the Money Show.
So the Ellerines and the Rubensteins are shareholders of which major retailer, Oliver, that is closing down, sadly?
Stadafords.
Stadafords, Oliver, is absolutely right. Stadafords been placed in business rescue wind down. And Pablo Fatidis and I were chatting about the lessons that we can learn from a collapsed 159-year icon. Which car company owns the Figo and the Icon names, Oliver?
Ford.
Ford, absolutely right. Ford South Africa announcing another fire risk-related recall. 16 cars worldwide have had fire issues, and they're recalling thousands of cars in South Africa as a result. Who is the chairman of the investment company Arise? He had a lousy day on the 9th of December 2015.
Oh,
Oliver, thank you very much for playing. Sorry that we have to gong you out. Leon, who had a lousy day on the 9th of December 2015, today he's the chairman of a company called Arise.
Oh, gosh, you got to go on that one,
I'm afraid. Oh, Leon, thank you for playing. What about you, Anthony? Arise, Anthony. Who runs Arise?
I can't think. Sorry, please. Thank you.
We all had a terrible day on the 9th of December 2015. One person had a worse day, and then he went and spent 3 months farming on his wife's farm, and that's how he collected himself together. And then he went to Teb Investments, and then Alan Gray gave him a non-executive gig. And then more recently, he's joined an investment company called Arise, and he was a guest on The Money Show this week, wasn't he, Pat?
Yeah, it's off.
Pardon?
Hello, Bruce.
It's off.
Yeah. Pat. The radio was on, yeah. Go ahead.
Who's the chairman of Arise?
Ntantanene.
Ntantanene, the former finance minister. He had a terrible day on the 9th of December 2015, and so did we all, because he got fired and we got a big fright. What was the bank that was bailed out by the Reserve Bank in 1985, Pat?
Bancorp.
Bancorp is absolutely right. And Robert Kiyosaki wrote a book, his first book. It made him incredibly famous. What was that book called?
Sorry, Bruce, you're cutting. I can't hear you.
Oh, I can't hear you either, Pat. We've got something in common. What was the book written by Robert Kiyosaki, the one that made him world famous, called, the one John Robbie liked so much?
Rich Dad, Poor Dad, something like
that. Yay, Pat, you're a superstar. You're a rich dad, if you're a dad, but certainly you're rich. 2,000 Rand better off. Well done to you, Pat, Wizard of the Brutal Biz Quiz this evening. When you're a CIO in a growing corporate, the job you do affects the work of everyone in the company, and their ability to work affects food on plates, but you knew that. MTN knows that between the successes and failures, the courage to continue is what counts. MTN also knows that the food is on other people's plates because your job is to make them able to do their. The courage to grow is business. MTN has the advisors, products and solutions that enable you to do so. Go to mtnbusiness.com/ZA to grow your business today.